Text 51551. The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Now, a new bus air and oral history project, aptly entitled Wheeling in the Years, is capturing the voices and memories of those who remember travelling by bus across Ireland over the past century. Led by oral historian Tomás McConmara, the project has already gathered a rich collection of personal stories, but he's eager to hear from more people willing to share their experience. And joining me in studio now is Tomás himself, along with two of his storytellers, Mick and Geraldine Dunn. Welcome to you all.
Thank you.
So Tomás McConmara.
Am I saying it right? Yeah, absolutely right.
Thanks very much. Total pro here. Great to meet you, Geraldine.
Thank you.
And great to meet Mick. And you are.
Thank you.
You are betrothed. You're married.
Yes.
How long are you guys married? Is that a personal question? Putting you on the spot.
43.
Oh well, congratulations. Yeah. We'll be getting to the secret of that in a minute. Tomás, tell us about the background to this project. Great name.
Yeah, no problem at all. Listen, the project, it comes from, I suppose, Bus Éireann's recognition that there's a cohort of people around the country who have, through their voices and their testimony and their experience, an insight into the history of Bus Éireann and of bus travel more generally across the country, from, you know, social perspectives, economic perspectives and even cultural perspectives. And I suppose they felt that it was really important to document those voices because, you know, we can have an official record of you know, Bus Éireann establishing itself in 1987 and CIE in 45 and so on, and that's really important, but unless we have the human voices, the human stories that can be relatable and can be engaging for the general public, then it's difficult maybe to draw the public in to the story of Bus Éireann and bus travel. So Bus Éireann felt it was important to develop this oral history project to go out across the country and to document those voices, to create a resource that over time then will be, an archive that can engage the public and bring them into the history. And it is really such a significant part of Irish life that maybe we don't consider it.
And you know what, I'm struck while you're talking there. So Bus Éireann is kind of like the vascular system of Ireland, isn't it? It's like the pulsing beat of our country, really.
I was only just looking ahead of this. Bus Éireann had 111 million trips last year. Now, that's a peak,
last year.
Now, you consider that down through the years and the decades, the amount of journeys that take place, and you know, for one person, one journey can be really significant depending on what happens on it and who they meet, you know, and so on. So I suppose it's in recognition of that, of people maybe who might be in an isolated part of rural Ireland, and when the bus service started, that opened up another world for them
completely.
So we, you know, feel that right across Ireland there are those stories, there are those connections, those insights. And as an oral historian, I would say I would always argue for the method of oral history to really document in the voices of those people those stories and those insights.
Have you spoken to a lot of people, staff and customers?
We have. We've predominantly been focused on staff members, be they former drivers, conductors, conductresses, inspectors and so on. But next week we're travelling to Leitrim to interview a man in his 90s who approached us because he and his late wife had travelled on buses all their lives. They never drove.
Wow.
And, you know, it was really something emotional and important to him in his life story, in his life journey. So we are kind of looking for people, I guess, from a broad range of perspectives, but particularly even from the passenger side, people who might have some special connection, whatever it might be, just one moment that could be a landmark in their life and is connected to buses, or if it's a more general consistent theme throughout their life, we'd love to hear from them. And you know, the key thing is we approach it in a very relaxed, informal way. You know, the interview sounds very serious, but it's actually just to create the space for them to tell their story and to create a record that will be there well beyond our time.
How are you collecting them? You're physically going to meet people and storing them on tape or digitally, or what are you doing?
We're working on both audio and video, depending on the interview. Sometimes we use both, sometimes we'll just use audio. But the principal thing is to get long form, you know, ethnographic oral history interviews with the people that have agreed to be interviewed by us. And then that is obviously preserved, or will be preserved, within Bus Éireann. And there will be...
It's a brilliant idea.
Well, I think, Brendan, the key point of it is oral history as a method has become more and more popular. Now, I've been doing it since I was a teenager, and I've always really felt it was so valuable to document the memories of particularly older people who can provide an insight into a time that maybe we don't recognise in contemporary life. But when it's in the voices of the people who experienced it, you're getting it from the ground up, and it's there forevermore. And as a resource, then, that can be used to engage people, even educationally and so on.
You've just literally, a memory just sprung into my head. My grandfather was a mechanic in CIE.
Oh.
And my grandmother's was over the wall from where the yard was. And we recorded recorded my grandfather before he passed away, telling us all the stories and stuff like that. Must dig that
out. We're going to have to get that, a legacy collection.
I have to get you that, yeah. So Mick and Geraldine, welcome.
Thank you.
Geraldine, I'm dying to ask you, did you meet on the bus or...
We did.
Oh, go on, tell us how you met.
How do we meet? Mick had been there probably... Mick started in 1971 and I joined in 1980.
Okay.
So when I came in, I mean, you got to know everybody bit by bit.
What was your job?
I was a bus conductress.
Oh, great.
Yeah. Yeah, and they were very scarce back then. There was only a handful of us.
I never ever saw a bus conductress, and I love that word was used, bus conductress.
Yeah. And I mean, I came in from Mill Street into Cork City, and
what did your family make of you being a bus conductress?
I suppose it was a big novelty.
I bet
it was like probably getting the guards or something that time.
yeah, of course,
because it was different. And my mother was a school bus driver. So CIE wasn't, alien to us. Like,
of course,
she drove a school bus in the country. So when I saw an advertisement then for a bus conductor, I applied for it and I got it. So I started training on the 1st of December 1980. And a few months later then, as I was around the place, I kind of Mick caught my eye, I suppose, like, but...
So Mick, tell me, how did you get started? You were in
1971.
Very good year, great vintage and that year.
Yeah, I was a conductor for 3 years. You couldn't go driving until you were 23. So...
could you not?
No, that was the rule. So I, as I say, how Ger and I met, we were in the job together, obviously, but... It was during a petrol strike going back in the 80s, early 80s.
Yeah.
And my car that I had at the time, it ran out of fuel out the road. So nobody around had petrol at the time. But Geraldine came to my aid. And
I was after getting petrol in Mill Street that day before I left Cork. For Cork.
So. Did you know what you were doing, Geraldine?
That's how we...
So he looked for help and I gladly put up my hand and said, I have petrol.
And so did you ever drive while you were the conductor? Did you ever work together?
We did then.
Did you?
Yeah.
A couple.
We got married in February 1982. And just after that time then, before we got married, we were on two different routes. And when we were married first, which wasn't very good for life, really. Being both country people who like to go home at the weekends and things. Mick would be off one weekend, I'd be off another. He'd be on late and I'd be on earlier, vice versa. So the whole all CIE or bus Éireann worked on seniority. So my driver, in due course, was going on to changing routes. And Mick applied for and got my service. So we were crew then for the next 6 years, like, together.
How was that working together?
From a home life, it made a huge difference because we were off the same days and rested the same days and everything. But from a work point of view, I suppose you can get your space all right. Like, you can go upstairs or sit down the back. We used to, at night, it was quiet on the buses, like until the bingo women would be going home after bingo at 10 o'clock or whatever. And we used to play 20 questions and things. But we wouldn't trust each other with the answer. So we'd have to write it on a bit of paper and put it in where you turn the number on the bus. Yes. Because he'd say, I made up the answer at the end.
Oh, go away. Wow.
But no, it was lovely. And it was a lovely place to work. Everybody was friendly. Everybody was nice. It was very family. In that you had father's sons
coming through.
Yeah. And even a girl that started around my time, she had two brothers in the job. You had more of the lads. They had generations of
course.
Yeah. They follow their family in, and it was a lovely place to work.
And you're both from, where are you from?
You're both Mill Street.
Mill Street, yeah. So I have a question here, Geraldine says for you, and I think it's quite poignant. How did the bus shape your community?
How did the bus? For both of us to come in from the country, it gave us a whole thing. Mick speaks better about like the social side of it, sports and things.
Well, we had a great social life, you know, in the garage. I was involved with the Inter Depot, which was a national thing, like up to TransLink and all involved.
Yeah,
and we had. Two soccer teams in Cork. We had a hurling team, a football team. We had a rugby club.
Wow.
Golf, pitch and putt.
Fishing,
you know. So, you know, there was an awful lot of social activity involved, you know.
Do you think in some way, Tomás, that like you have to be reminded of how important that service is and how what it did for communities?
Yeah, I agree, because I think sometimes when something is so present, you know, we
you
all
just take
see
it for
buses,
granted.
You do, and particularly we forget, again, going back to those maybe isolated rural areas. One of the people we interviewed was a man called Cyril McIntyre, who'd be very well known in Busairn, and he explained to me really, really well, like the intricacy and the calculation involved in organising the services. And it was a real determination, this is going back now to the 60s and 70s, a real determination to make services available in the most rural areas across Ireland. And again, there are people who that became their social lifeline. You know, other than that, there would be isolation. So it was really, really an important service, you know, and because we see it circulating all the time, we see these buses, we just forget how significant that it actually is. And, you know, bus travel in its current form began in about 1919. You know, Busairn itself was founded in 1987, and emerging from CIE before that. So even though we're reaching into the distant past through the memories of our people, they're still there now. You know, we can still reach back to the 60s, even into the 50s, and in some cases beyond that. So it's really, really important to capture that now, because tram services began in the 1870s. I'd love to speak to somebody who would remember or have the recordings of that. So why I think now it's so important, even though we're meeting young people like Mick and Geraldine, there are older people as well who we want to speak to, you know, whatever their perspective or their connection to bus travel and Busairn is, to put those voices on record, because they're there then and they will outlive us. And it's a remarkable, you know, thing to be involved in, that you will actually, we're generating material that will outlive all of us, that will be there for, you know, people in 100 years time to listen back to find out what was bus travel like in the 1980s, in the 1970s, which will be entirely alien to what it will have been, you know, 100 years later.
So this is part of sort of igniting our appreciation of it and remembering, you know, how important it was and is, I suppose. Do you think, Geraldine, has bus travel lost its magic over the years?
Well, I'll go back to the last question you asked me about community for a start.
Thank you.
To finish on that. You know, in the housing estates in Cork City, you would have had an awful lot of people from the buses lived in, say, Black Rock or in Gronabrohar or Ballyfihan. And so because they were friends at work, that friendship was taken back into their community as well, because they would have all bought houses or got houses.
Amazing.
Or whatever around the same time. So it made it a bigger community than just Capwell Garage. Like,
yes.
Sorry, what was the question you asked me there?
And then, do you think bus travel has lost its magic over the years?
Well, I do think that the conductor, or be it a conductor, male or female, was a big loss to a lot of people. You know, you'd get asked all sorts of questions. You got all the news from them. They love to meet you again tonight or tomorrow evening when they'd come on your bus, and the passengers would have news for you. We had great fun, Mick and myself, with the bingo women and all that. They'd be going to bingo from all the different places.
Did you have the twirlies? Did you ever hear the twirlies? Are we twirly? They'd come with the pensioners would come early in the morning and say, and it was a conductor told me that, oh, here's the twirlies. And I was like, what are they? Are we too early?
Oh, the free travel.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, no, they'd be tapping their pocket.
What they? What was that?
Just tap their pocket, like, I have the pass in there.
The secret code.
I wouldn't dare ask them to take it out.
Oh, would you not? Oh, sure, you'd probably know them all, would you?
Well, you'd know them all anyway. But when our first child was born, she was born a little premature, and I was in the hospital in Cork. And they noticed me missing from the bus, and they asked me where I was. And, oh, did the baby come? Oh, the baby came. And he came in to visit me the next night in the hospital, and he had a Roacher Stores bag, remember the plastic
bag?
Yes,
yeah.
And he tapped it out onto the bed, and it was full of all crumpled up pound notes.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow.
They had a whip around in the bus, like,
oh,
for the baby.
Gorgeous.
And you were talking about people that hardly had it for themselves.
Oh,
do you know what I mean?
No, that's just, it's gorgeous.
Story, yeah, yeah. When we got married, sorry, one more story. When we got married, we were getting married, the gifts started coming into the statue, the hut in Patrick Street in Cork. And one of the inspectors called me one day and he says, this is not a drop-off, whatever. He didn't put it very pleasant. They were dropping in gifts for us.
Wow.
You see, we stayed on that same route I was on it the whole time I was working.
Amazing. Yeah. That's so lovely, isn't it?
And I think maybe you're talking about the magic there. I think maybe that sense of community, you know, I'm not saying it's entirely lost, but I think it probably has faded a lot over the years, certainly certainly from the people I've spoken to.
Oh, yeah.
And that would extend beyond, I mean, you're talking there about Cork City, but you know, it seems to me from the people I've spoken to, whether you spend time up in Cavan or you're in Dublin or any part of the country, once you're a busman or a buswoman, you know, you're connected to that story, you know, you're connected, and it's all part of that one family. But certainly I was really touched by that story of the bingo women putting the, you know, putting a whip around. There's so much kind of love in that. And that comes from knowing Geraldine and having the chats with her, and knowing Mick and having the chats with
him. You can hear them, they'd be like, that poor girl up and down those stairs.
Just follow on that. And some of them actually came into the ward to see the baby.
And they were from the Cope Foundation, you know, they've been children with needs, young people.
Beautiful.
And they were on our route, and they came in and they brought bags of sweets, you know, like Scots Clan and things like that. That's and then beautiful. The baby was in the neonatal. So, of course, they were very disappointed they didn't get to see a baby.
Okay,
so then they sat around my bed just looking at the sweets. And then I said, you can have them. And they ate the sweets and then they left.
That's amazing.
You know, we so appreciated those kind of things as well from our side of it. You know?
And Tomás, you're looking for people.
Yeah, we are. I mean, anybody who's listening in today who feels they have a connection, be it whether they worked with Bus Éire and we still want to hear from them, or people who, you know, come from the passenger perspective and have some connection, whatever that might be, we'd love to hear from them. And, you know, we'll talk them through it. We'll make an arrangement with them, hopefully, to go and see them and to document their story. And as I said, when that's all put together, then you have a collective archive that hopefully helps us tell the story of Bus Éire and bus travel in the country.
And how can they get in touch?
Oh yeah, what I would say about it, for anyone who would think about doing it, I would not be afraid of doing it, because we've done it and it was so easy, and we were made feel so comfortable doing it by Tomás and his company, that please don't be afraid to come forward and tell your story, is what I would say.
Well, it was very easy to do it with Mick and Geraldine, as you can imagine.
Can imagine, yeah.
you mentioned the Wheeling Through the Years. You'll find online details about the website on Bus Éire, or about the project on Bus Éireann's website.
Right.
But I think it's press@busairn.ie for the email. But certainly Wheeling Through the Years,
you'll find
all the contact details, and we'd be really delighted. Our phone number is there, email address is there. We're very happy to take the farmer a phone call, have a chat, we'll talk them through it, and we'll make arrangements with them. And as Geraldine says, they're just, please feel welcome to make contact with us, because we want to document that story.
Dr. Tomás McNamara, oral historian, for this great project. It's absolutely brilliant, Wheeling in the Years. And Mick and Geraldine Dunn, thank you so much for coming and chatting to us.
Thank you.
Wonderful. Thank you so much. Let's take a break.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.